listening to Rattle and Pedal, Divergent Thoughts on Marketing and Growing Professional Services Firms. Your hosts are Jason Malicki and Jeff McKay.
So, Jeff, I've been thinking a lot about our series on AI, and I've come up with a task that I think AI could really help me with.
Do tell.
I think it could remind me that I'm in charge of hitting record on their podcasts. Because I forget that every time.
And how would it do that? How would that do?
I'm not exactly sure. But I just came to me as we were talking, because for 188 episodes or whatever, you were the one in charge of the recording and you always hit record. And so I've been trained that I just kind of stand here and then you eventually start the thing. But then today you remind me, I had it. And every time, the last eight I've done, I'm in your whatever, however many that is. And you have to remind me every single time. So maybe AI can, I guess maybe not remind me, just do it for me.
That would be nice.
Would be nice.
That little story is just a microcosm of Rattle and Pedal.
all the burden that you bear.
That joke. But it's so funny. We're approaching 200 episodes.
I know. And I was thinking about this the other day. We need to have some kind of celebration or special. We need to do something special for episode 200. So if listeners have suggestions, feel free to send them to Jeff. If they're good at suggestions, send them to me. If they're lousy ones, send them to Jeff.
I can't believe that. I mean, that's just dumbfounding to me.
Well, think about it this way. So there's probably at least 300 to 400 hours of your life that you've now spent with me. So we could have a whole reflections episode just on that, right?
Well, it's been time well spent. And it's funny that thought popped into my head, because this episode is specifically going back and looking at our most recent series on AI, which seems like it just started yesterday, and discussing what we're taking away from these conversations.
Yeah, these are some of my favorite episodes, because it's a chance to talk about what we learned together and synthesize everything that we heard from various guests and what we've read and what we've not talked about. A lot of times there's stuff that bleeds into these that is stuff that we're both reading but not talking about. And I want to open us with a quote. And I don't even know if it's a direct quote. It's from my notes from our interview with Michelle Swan at Tercera. And I know she said this. I just don't know if it is captured in the recording or not. But she said, at Tercera, at this point, they fundamentally believe AI is going to fundamentally change professional services. It's just not clear when. And I think that's maybe the most important quote that came out of the conversations to me, because that's the lens I think you have to take to this technology, is that it's going to change a lot of things in your firm and in your clients' organizations. And you're probably not going to know exactly what or when, but you've got to start leaning into all aspects of it. But we're going to start with takeaways. So you did a really nice job of synthesizing a set of takeaways, you know, sort of what we heard and what we learned from our guests and our research on the topic. And I think I counted seven. You may not actually have seven, but I counted seven. So why don't you start there? Because I think you've got some really good ones. Lead us through your takeaways from this series.
My pleasure. And this is in true stream of consciousness of Jeff McKay. As my kids used to always make fun of me, whether it's at the dinner table or in the car or somewhere, I would get this expression on my face, which I guess was staring into space. And all the conversation around the table would stop. And someone would say, "Mom, Dad's in Jeff head," and it's because I went out on some thinking tangent, which I just thought it was so funny. And we would just laugh as a family, Dad's in Jeff head. So this is a reflection of dad being in Jeff head.
I do the same thing, and it, my kids call it zoning out. They'll, you know, they'll say, "Oh, dad zoned out for a little bit here. What's you know?" And it, bring him back to earth. So, all right, well, let's get inside your head. Let's get inside of Jeff head.
All right. Number one, AI sucks, and AI is amazing.
Is AI going to ruin everything? Is that going to be a new series for us? AI ruined everything. Marketing ruined everything. Sales ruined everything.
It's no matter who you talk to, there's these expectations, if you will, about what AI is or it isn't. And it never seems to live up to the expectation. You know, the people that think it sucks, when they actually use it, say, you know, this is really cool. I didn't know it could do that. And those that think, you know, it's amazing, I kind of fall into this category. And then when I go to use it, I'm disappointed with what I get back. And in the work I'm doing with clients, as they try to figure out what's the play here, it seems like that theme keeps coming up time and time again. There's all this potential. Now that potential doesn't exist because people aren't ready. And every one of our guests kind of hit on that, I felt like.
Yeah, I was thinking about, well, a couple of things came to mind. I was thinking about Greg Bogus's comments about how the people that are either that think this is going to change the world and be the most revolutionary thing ever, and the people that are doomsdayers are the people that haven't really used it. He talked a little bit about that. And then I also thought about if you weren't in that episode, but if you watched the interactions he and I did around basically creating a watercolor of Queen Elizabeth sitting on the beach, it's pretty phenomenal how good Midjourney was at creating that. So since then, I've signed up for a Midjourney account, and I've tried to get it to generate illustrations for our email newsletter. And I can't say that I've come close to anything as remarkably good as that. Everything's kind of like, meh. And so it's sort of like you said, once you start to use it, you're a little either underwhelmed or something like that. So I think that's a great refrain. I think it's temper your enthusiasm, or temper your frustration, maybe depending on which end you're on, right?
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Be realistic.
Yeah. Be realistic, be optimistic, be, in general, try to be anyway, but be realistic. I think it's also interesting. I was talking to our IT folks about the Microsoft Copilot, because the Microsoft Copilot was first released to enterprises, and then they've brought it down into smaller organizations. One of the things that stuck with me in our conversation about it was they said, well, most of the feedback they've gotten from users is that they're a little disappointed with its results relative to what they've seen from ChatGPT and other, you know, tools already out there in the market. And the reason they said was because it hasn't had enough time and enough content to train on yet, which is kind of remarkable if you stop and think about it. If Microsoft, one of the biggest tech companies on the planet, has not had enough time to train this thing, that tells you something, right? All right, let's go to number two. My, you know, takeaway number two. I like takeaway number one a lot, by the way. I think it's a great, best place to start.
Number two, going back to your episode with Greg that I was not a part of, but I did watch. I think that AI needs to be looked at as a catalyst, as a starting point. I loved Greg's story about his daughter, you know, sitting in the car dealership for 3 hours. Me too. And it was so weird having a conversation with ChatGPT. I mean, all kinds of fears and bad thoughts went through my mind as a 9-year-old is having a conversation with a piece of software. But I love the story because he talked about how what came back from her direction really wasn't that good, getting back to it sucks and it's amazing, but that she cut and pasted it into Google and she started working on it.
Yeah.
And as she did that, I think he said it got up to like 120 pages over the last year or something.
8 or 9 chapters or something. Yeah. I mean, like, and what you said, she was a 9-year-old. I don't remember.
Yeah, so that's
a 9-year-old kid.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But the takeaway from Greg and so many others that we've had is it's a great starting point. The other thing Greg said that I really liked, if you want to get an answer from the internet, you know, ask the question, get a wrong answer that directs you to the right answer. Or it was something along those lines. I was like, that's so true. And I feel like my own use around ChatGPT and some of these other tools is I throw it in, I'm disappointed, right? I rework it. You know, I feel like developing the skill of prompting ChatGPT is such a critical skill. Yeah. But I always find ChatGPT and these others are just starting points.
Yeah.
They really are.
As you know, I mean, a lot of our work is thought leadership development. So a lot of our work is working with firms and their subject matter experts to develop points of view on critical business issues. And of course, there's a process we use for that. There's a questionnaire that we frequently use again and again. And sometimes we'll provide it in advance to a subject matter expert. And recently, I wasn't in this call, but we had a client say, well, I asked these questions to my co-pilot and here you go. And so basically they just taken the questions, shoved them into ChatGPT or the Microsoft co-pilot and spit them back. And so in the mind of the subject matter expert, that they were done, right? To your point, it was, you know, this wasn't the start of the catalyst. This was the completion of the task. And of course, you know, we said, well, okay. So what you've managed to do is ask the entire world their wisdom on these 6 questions. And now you have those answers. So to your point, you kind of have maybe not the wrong answer, but you'd certainly have what I would argue is the conventional wisdom of the answer. Wisdom being maybe a loose word there, because I don't know that generative AI tool has wisdom. It's a conversation for possibly another time, but yeah, I think this notion that it's a starting point is the most important thing. Because I think that type of situation that's a perfectly fine use case to see what comes back and then say, okay, now what do I, and you're going to come back to this later, so I don't want to get in front of it, but what do I think is right here? What do I think is wrong here? And where do I go from here? So
to me, that's the AI equivalent of the analog of thought leaders who go to marketing and other teams and want marketing to interview them and then write a white paper. And I think that's the way to produce thought leadership because they can't write. They don't have time to write.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is their idea is not fully baked. They haven't done the critical thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, they haven't taken the time to think, which is the most important part of the thought leader, right? You have to think to have thoughts. So, okay. Next one.
Yeah. If I had to pick a word that encapsulated my takeaways from all these conversations that we've had, it would be the word co-pilot. I like that. I like that word. Several people in our interviews, I think Michelle was the first one to use it in our conversations. But all the subsequent guests kind of built on this. And it goes back to, you know, takeaway number 2, that AI is a catalyst. It's a starting point. But more importantly, it's a co-pilot that augments the user, right? It allows the user to focus on the things that only a human can do and offload the, you know, the technical stuff to the software that takes time. And if you have the concept of co-pilot, this fear and anxiety about being replaced or the lack of clarity about what you need to be doing or expecting out of AI, to me, begins to dissipate because you see it as a partner in crime, if you will, right? Your wingman.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really critical takeaway to give context to what AI is and what the possibilities of it are.
Yeah. In that sense, to me, it's not unlike previous technology in the sense of, and the example I'll give, Planet Money did a really cool episode years ago on the creation of the spreadsheet and the creation of Excel. And the spreadsheet actually predates computers and technology. I mean, so if you went back in time pre-computers and you were a business leader and you said, we're selling our t-shirts at $19.99 and our sweatshirts at $39.99, and we want to change our pricing to $24.95 and $29.95, what would happen? You asked a person and that person went away. And a couple of weeks later, they came back with this giant sheet of paper, a giant ledger that with all their mathematical computations to say, this is what they think is going to happen. And there wasn't a lot of people doing that work because it was such tedious work and it was hard to do. Well, you know, spreadsheets and Excel and tools like that changed all that. And of course, Excel gets used by billions of people every day. So I think it's sort of like, I think the analogy is a really good one in the sense that there is going to be job displacement. I'm sure there already has been. But, you know, it may not be as widespread as people think. And more likely what's going to happen is it's going to create new ways to do things that we had not thought of. And tons of people are going to do them. And, you know, I'm not claiming that, you know, AI is just another spreadsheet, but it just is sort of an analogy. But I agree. I like the notion of a co-pilot and I like the notion of it being a tool to augment what you're doing. And I think if you think about it in that lens, even if your job is at risk of total replacement, you're probably going to find a path to another role within your organization that you didn't see because you just kind of got an opportunistic mindset, you know, that open mindset. So
maybe this is like 3.5 takeaway. You know, as you described the spreadsheets and the research and everything, what's so fascinating about AI and professional services firms, going back to our opening about what Michelle said, you know, it's going to fundamentally change professional services. We just don't know when. And I've been saying for over a decade that, you know, SaaS companies are the professional services firms of the future. When I said that, I didn't see AI as what was going to take that to fruition, but I would agree with her. But what makes AI so powerful as a co-pilot and having such an impact on professional services is it hits the key drivers of what professional services is, what a knowledge worker is. And the first one is time, right? We live and die by utilization. Time is money in a professional services firm. And this attacks that head on, right? And takes out that unproductive work and allows it to be allocated to higher value work, which is the second thing, which is ideas. Professional services firms, and particularly you know, strategic firms or even, you know, some of the IT consulting firms that aren't doing, you know, kind of mundane regulatory compliance work, live and die by ideas, right? To generate competitive advantage for their clients. And AI becomes that catalyst, that starting point for faster ideation. And I think that's really something. And then the third one is results, right? Does no good to have these big ideas and smart people if you can't take that and apply it to a business result that people need. You're just an academic. That's where AI as tool should be producing solution, right? The tangible execution of the idea. It seems like every one of our guests, you know, kind of circled around that perspective as well. It's very clear. Those are the drivers. That's where it's impacting. Get to it.
Yeah, I think it's I wrote a brief LinkedIn article about this. I think it's changing the value proposition a little bit of the consultant. And to your point of changing the drivers of professional services work. And in that article, I wrote that pattern recognition, which is a lot of what consultants do, AI does that really well. So if that's your core value proposition is, I've seen this before, here's what you need to do, then I think you need to rethink your value proposition at an individual level. And I think that kind of ladders up to a firm level. I think, you know, to your point of time, I'll go look back again and real quick and just say, we've seen this before, right? And if I think back to, you know, our own business, you know, my listeners may not know this, but Rattleback was founded under a different name by my father in around 1972. And it was a design business, and they weren't using computers back then. And so there was a point when they had to migrate from design by hand to design by computer. And as you can guess, that compressed the process dramatically over time. And so, you know, the notion of your billing by time, that whole equation had to change, and they navigated through that. And so companies have navigated through these types of compressions before. So there's no reason to believe you won't be able to navigate through it again, especially if you're still in a, you know, a time-based billing mechanism, which I would recommend you really radically rethink in this moment of opportunity. All right, next one. Yeah. And I've lost track. There's a couple more I see in my notes that you haven't hit on yet.
Yeah. Well, you hit on my fourth one already, is what's the opportunity here? And I love the conversation we had with Peter and Courtney from KnownWell. In talking about their readiness tool. And that conversation focused on the pattern recognition, and that was a strength of a consultant. But now the opportunity is seeing what falls outside the pattern. Where's the white space? What's the opposite of the conventional wisdom that you just talked about a couple minutes ago when you were talking about feeding the questions into ChatGPT and getting the entire internet's point of view on it? The firms that can see what's not there are the ones I think are going to be the most successful.
Yeah, it goes back to that old, you know, zig and zag quote, right? When everybody else is zigging, you need to zag. It's a super simplistic quote, but I think that that's essentially what you're saying. And it's knowing when to break wisdom to say, well, okay, that's the solution everyone's doing, but why are we doing it that way? Maybe there's a better way, and seeing that better way. So it's sort of seeing through the patterns to something better or different. And it may even, you know, philosophically for a second, it may not necessarily even be seeing something better, but just seeing other ways to accomplish the task at hand and being willing to try them and see if they perform better. And I know I told this story in our when we talked about this in one of our episodes about the movie about the Formula One driver that they picked off of video games, and how there's the whole scene in there where, you know, there's a line showing the way to go, and he's breaking the pattern just again and again and again, and he's breaking the pattern because he knows he can do better than the collective if he breaks the pattern. And so it's people like that are willing to try it and say, well, what happens if I break the line? Well, good things turns out for that guy. So anyway,
that's the whole story of the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And it leads me to my fifth takeaway. No matter how much AI sucks or is amazing, or we get infatuated with how it works, the consistent thing is, if it's not generating value what's the point? And it is the focus on how do you use the tool to generate value. And Michelle Swan talked about this from an investor perspective, right? In the companies that her firm is investing in, how they rate, you know, the Tercera 30. It's all about what kind of shareholder value are you generating? And then we had Aisha on talking about productization, whether it's with AI or not. And I love the way she articulated, you need to pick the big, urgent, expensive problem to solve. And if that doesn't exist, all the productization doesn't matter, right? If you can't identify the problem that wants to be solved and people are willing to pay a lot to do it, to get it fixed, don't bother. And most firms don't think about that. They think about the novelty of applying a capability, or they extrapolate one client's need with a broader market that doesn't exist. So firms need to be thinking about, is there real outstanding value in the application of this? And the answer is yes, but where?
Yeah, where and how? You know, what I like about with that comment and that conversation is that, you know, that we've said that for years, right? This notion that you've heard me say, I think too many firms are solutions in search of problems. And I have this sort of belief that a firm at its essence should be designed to solve a central client problem, like a big problem. So that was sort of news to my ears, or music to my ears, news to my ears. News would be really bad. I don't think you want news right now. Music to my ears. So but what I really like that came out of that conversation was that it's sort of elevating the urgency of that, the recognition that, ooh, we better really figure that out quickly. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic that's playing out here, is that, well, do we really know the answer to that question? And if we don't, we better figure it out soon, or we have a real problem on our hands.
Yeah, one of the
questions. I feel like you hit all of your takeaways. Did we miss one? Okay, so my notes are bad.
I just want to say this. One of the questions I always ask my clients when we're doing strategy, and this is not my question, but I love the question. What are your clients not doing right now, but would love to do if they could? Mm-hmm. It's a real, you know, kind of blue sky type of question that takes people out of that yes, but response, right? Yes, I get that, but if there were no limitations, what would they love to do, right? For me, I always say, I don't want a faster, more environmentally friendly car. I want to teleport like Star Trek characters, right? What do they call that in Harry Potter when they jump from one spot to the other?
Oh, I can't believe I don't know this off the top of my God. Head. Somewhere my 11-year-old is very upset with me.
Is it apparate? What is it?
You're very close. I don't, yeah.
That's what I want. Right. But you can't do that.
Yeah.
But that's what I want. So work back from.
That's just because we're lowly muggles. Yeah. We're lowly muggles. If we were wizards, we could.
You're listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on growing your professional services firm. Your hosts are Jason Malicki, principal of Rattleback, the marketing agency for professional services firms, and Jeff McKay, former CMO and founder of strategy consultancy Prudent Pedal. If you find this podcast helpful, please help us by telling a friend and rating us on iTunes. Thank you. Now back to Jason and Jeff.
So the point is, generate value. All right.
Yeah.
Two more. One real quick.
Yeah.
I love the conversation with David DeWolf because it jumped up, you know, to this higher philosophical plane, where so many others were looking at the tactical implementation and threats. He was looking up at the moral, the theological, the philosophical importance of AI as an opportunity for us to re-examine what it means to be human and the human condition and what is human flourishing and what can we do now with this tool to, I was going to say, not reinvent, rediscover that capability and unleash it. And I just love those types of conversations. And I cannot wait to see where Knownwell goes. I really can't wait to see.
Yeah. I mean, super cool firm. I was really glad we had him on. And I really liked the five altitudes that he talked about in that conversation. And I thought that was refreshing as well, because so much of the focus on AI has been at that productivity layer, that individual use layer. Even what we've talked about to some extent today has sometimes kind of tripped into that. And this notion of, well, how do you operationalize something? How do you take it up to the strategy level? How do you take it up to the culture level? Do you take it up to the culture level? Should you take it up to the culture level? Does that even make sense? You know, I think that whole conversation is really important. And I think it's certainly in terms of things you should be doing now, I think that's definitely one of the most important things is, you know, I put in here, well, we'll get to it, but just getting clear on who you are as an organization, purpose, mission, values, what's acceptable use of AI, what's unacceptable use of AI, you know, understanding your own guardrails as an organization is really maybe one of the most important things you can do. In the near future, if you haven't already.
I agree. Which leads me to the final one. And I had more takeaways, but I'll end on this because people may be getting bored. I walked away from these conversations with kind of a three-level hierarchy about AI as a tool and its practical application. And the first level I kind of categorize as these, you know, kind of brand name new online products like ChatGPT or Midjourney or whatever, where, you know, pay your $20, get out there, experiment, and use it as a personal productivity tool, get rocking and rolling. And see it as an investment in understanding and in productivity. And those tools, you know, we've talked about several of them, are performing well. We talked about, you know, how professional services firms are using various tools and in their thought leadership generation and in those types of things. That's the low-hanging fruit. Jump in and let people start playing with them, but keep an eye on them, you know, from a brand perspective. The second one is, how is AI being baked into the core platforms that businesses are using to run their businesses, whether that's ERP or CRM or HR or finance, and what's the impact on those? To me, you know, that has an internal and an external perspective, right? For me as a firm, but in the value that I can help with a client, but being on top of that, I think it's critical, because that stuff just kind of rolls out because they're all SaaS applications and all of a sudden it's there and you don't even know what it is. There's no training or anything that comes along with it.
Or how it really works. Like, what data sets is it drawing from and what inferences is it making and why, so that you can at least understand the sort of like understand the nature of an algorithm. Why does TikTok present this video? Why does Google present this search result? You don't have to know all the workings of it, nor can you, but you need to have some understanding of it so that you can understand how it's influencing you and your behavior, which I think you, as a leader, same thing inside your organization, right? So keep going. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, that's just like letting a stranger into your house.
Yeah. Start right. wandering around. Hey, yeah. What are you doing here?
What are you doing in my kitchen? That's disconcerting. And then the third one, and this goes, I think, more to our conversation with Known Well and the generating value and things that are the real potential of AI, is how do you activate the institutional knowledge of a firm across core systems, across various databases, but even more so kind of tying in, you know, the concept of AI as catalyst or co-pilot, the knowledge and wisdom that are in your people's brains that isn't digitized, right? And how do you bring all those together to generate value? And you know, that's the big question, and we'll get to that. But I think if people were approached, and I'm just a simple guy, that's why I needed those three kind of categorizations of thinking about AI and its application in creating value. And it allows me to, I don't know, to think and execute against it.
Yeah, I think that there's, this will get a philosophical real quick, but you go back to our one of our former clients, Tom Stewart's work around knowledge management, and how ultimately a large firm in particular, a lot of the challenge is how do you access, find, locate, and deploy the knowledge of your people? And how do you make that knowledge accessible and visible to clients as well? You know, he would always say, I need, an SAP specialist in Sao Paulo tomorrow. Do you have one? It would be that specific. But I think the interesting thing about all this is that so large firms have invested in knowledge management systems or systems to try to categorize, identify, and codify knowledge for decades. I think one of the interesting things that came out of our conversations with Known Well was, so there's this opportunity to probably get better at knowledge capture, knowledge dissemination, knowledge codification, all that kind of stuff with AI. But there's also the ability for AI to start to generate new forms of knowledge inside the firm that didn't exist already, because AI can see things that we can't sometimes. And that was some of what they're doing with their client intel tool. And so I think that whole other layer of, okay, we can get better at things that we're not doing now, and we can also learn things we didn't know before, is going to be a pretty fascinating thing as it unfolds. And in that sense, you would think larger organizations have a little bit of an advantage just because they have larger data sets, they have larger resources and that kind of stuff. But we'll see over time, I suppose.
It's funny that you say that, because the disadvantage they have is the advantage that smaller firms know, is the smaller firms have faster access to the non-digitized institutional knowledge. Yeah. Because of the relationships and size that they have.
And the roadblocks that are going to inevitably come into place in large firms, right? I mean, it takes them forever to roll out anything. And so, that's going to be a huge disadvantage that they'll have a hard time overcoming. Because you can only imagine all of the political, legal, and physical roadblocks that would come with trying to adopt Known Well's client intel tool for a really large enterprise. You imagine navigating that. I couldn't do it. So, okay. Well, let's talk about what firms should be doing now, and I'll move a little faster through this. I don't think we covered a lot of this already, and I'm just going to sort of organize it. One of the things I thought about leading into this episode was that I actually think for a lot of firms, there's two work streams that have to happen simultaneously, and I'm calling them an internal stream and an external stream, because there's the implications of AI on the firm, and then there's the implications of AI on the client base. And sometimes those two things converge and sometimes they don't. And the example I gave earlier was, you know, if you're a IT services firm and you're working in the Salesforce ecosystem and you're doing Salesforce implementations, well, logically, AI, your use case of AI looks a lot like your client's use case of AI. If you're a architecture firm working with K-12 institutions, your use case of AI and your client's use case of AI are going to be radically different, right? So these things may converge, they may diverge. on the internal stream. And so you may end up having, I'm talking out loud and I'm going to talk rather fast. You may end up having two sponsors. You might have a sponsor that's championing AI and its use inside the firm. And there may be a sponsor that's championing how you think about and approach AI in your client work, potentially. On the internal side, I think there's really four things that you have to be working on. I think the first one we talked about is just be clear on who you are, purpose, mission, values, put some guardrails in place, acceptable use of AI, what's unacceptable. You just have to understand that stuff. And David DeWolf did a really nice job of talking about that. I think the second step is assessing your readiness. Like, are you ready as a firm to be adopting any of these technologies beyond the productivity level at an operational level, let's say? And if you're not, what do you have to do to get there? KnownWell has their readiness tool. That's a great resource, but I think it goes beyond that. Obviously there's knowledge, there's understanding, there's data, there's technology, there's governance. There's a whole bunch of stuff that even in a small firm, you probably need to at least spend some time thinking about. Item three, I had just risks and opportunities. I think, you know, as a senior leadership team, you just have to talk about that. And you have to be in a regular recurring dialogue about how might AI disrupt your business based on what you're seeing and hearing and reading and and talking to clients about. You've got to be on top of that. And you have to almost build like a knowledge repository of that as you start to, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? And then how might it accelerate the business, right? And I think you have to just sort of have an ongoing effort to identify those things and talk about them. And then the fourth one I have in there is just to develop some options. And to me, it's maybe a collection of pilot programs. I think we saw some of this. In fact, there was a nice article in the journal about, I think it was BCG that did a pilot program to test AI's use in three different very specific client scenarios. And they had control groups and AI using groups just to see how the groups performed. And they learned a lot about like when AI was effective, a great tool to augment their people, and when it wasn't. And so I think running those types of pilot programs, so you have the option to go deeper later is probably critical to do. That to me is all stuff that you need to do like in the next, this year. Like you have to, I don't know the actual timing or sequence, but I think all that stuff has to happen this calendar year. Or you're going to be in trouble in 25.
I like that list. It's short and to the point. There are three things jumped out at me as you went through that list. I love the way you talked about, depending on the type of firm you are, the paths with your clients may or may not intersect.
Yeah.
I think firms, regardless of what seems obvious on that front, in the two descriptions or the two examples you gave, ask the question, our paths look parallel. But should they be parallel? Should they intersect? Where might they intersect? Going back to my Star Trek example, right? Where could we add more value? What are they not doing that they would like to if we could?
It's disapparate. That's the word. Sorry. Finally came to me. My 11-year-old will be pleased. I recovered.
Good. The second thing was be clear on who you are, what your values and mission are. Even if you can't answer that clearly right now, make sure if you're a leader of the firm, you're asking the questions. Building awareness of the need for that clarity in this context will pay dividends, not just for AI, but a lot of different areas, I think. Knowing who you are and who you are not is critical.
I want to piggyback real quick. I think it's just having the conversations you're probably not having, right? You talk about this a lot. I think this is actually like really right in your wheelhouse of kind of just the philosophical nature of the firm and the business. It's just the conversation, you're in the day-to-day all the time, and you're just not having those conversations. Yeah, you might step back and have a strategy conversation. What markets do we want to go after? Why want to go after them? But that's not a philosophical conversation. And so I think it's having those hard conversations that just don't have the habit of having.
Yeah, that reminds me of a blog post I wrote many years ago. I'll put a link in the show notes. I think it was called 10 Questions Prudent Firms Ask Themselves as Individual Leaders and as a Firm. I think that could be useful for that.
Yeah, I remember that post. I can't remember the details of it, but yeah. I remember reading it. So yeah, I agree.
And then the last comment of around assessing risk, I will point back to Aisha episode on productization. Mm-hmm. Your industry is going to be cannibalized. Is it going to be cannibalized by you or some outsider, right? It's the innovator dilemma, Clayton Christensen, but the risk is there. You got to make the executive decision about when and how you're going to cannibalize your own business because it's coming. And I thought she did a phenomenal job of talking about that.
I also think I want to just give a shout out to her on the ladder of productization. I think that's a really important thing to take away here. You may not have a direct AI software come at you that's going to disrupt your business, but you might have a competitor that's using AI in a smarter way or a better way or in a way that suddenly is beating you all the time. You know, whether it's they're charging less, they're whatever, and you don't know why. And it's because they've probably, you know, augmented their service with an AI tool or a product somehow. And so that episode is worth, you know, multiple listens. You know, you could listen to her 3 or 4 times and not come away disappointed with what you learned.
Yeah, I agree. So. All right. So that was the internal. Let's talk about the external.
All right. The external I see is a little simpler in a way. I have 3 steps. They're not nearly as elegant as the 4 internal. The first one's the hardest. It's just, you just have to develop a clear point of view on how AI is impacting your clients. What should they be thinking about? What should they do when? And it's the same sort of questions you're asking yourself, but how might AI disrupt their current business model? And I gave examples. I was like, imagine if you're a strategy firm and you're working in the media business. You know, the first thing you might be thinking about is changes in consumer behavior. Customer acquisition strategies for streaming companies is going to change. I mean, you've talked a lot about inbound is going to go through some change. You know, the behavior of going to Google and asking questions and scanning the results, that behavior is changing pretty quickly, right? So customer acquisition is going to look different. The flip of that might be how might AI accelerate or improve things? And in that same example, it might be how is it going to accelerate the production process? We've already seen this, right? It's going to collapse it, right? It's going to make the ability to produce new media quicker. So, you know, these are just examples, but you've got to have a point of view for your clients because they're hungry for it. I don't think you don't have the luxury of waiting on this in most firms. You've got to dig in and you've got to figure it out. And either you've got the experts that have that view, or you've got to, you know, invest in some research. And I even did a webinar and wrote an article about like, how do you get a point of view on this right now? Because I think it's not as simple as previous technologies where you can research and find best practices easily. It's kind of tricky because the best practices are hidden and hard to find. Anyway, I think that's the first and most important thing.
The opportunity for firms in that area, in my mind, right out of the gate, is help your clients make sense of the noise. There's so much noise around AI, and that leads to inertia, or it leads to not fully baked decisions, which often produces suboptimal outcomes. What clients value from trusted advisors is context, right? Help me make sense of this chaotic world in a way that benefits me individually, us as an organization. So I would encourage firms to think about where is the confusion in your markets and where can you provide clarity, because there's just way too much noise.
Yep. It's Maria Bolden's sense making, right? It's making sense of the noise. A great example of this is one of our prior guests, Dave Patnaik from Jump. He wrote a really eloquent piece that was very pointed and very specific about, as it relates to AI, here's three things that you need to be doing on three different time horizons. I think he did it better than most I've seen. And it wasn't like he, was like, we're going to go all in on AI and everything's going to be about AI. It was just making sense of what's going on and what to pay attention to and what not to. So I think step two, step one is you have to help your clients make sense of this because they're overwhelmed and they don't know what to do. And sometimes they may not even be fully aware of the technology. And I've definitely had conversations with firm leaders that were just not, even despite all the frenzy around this, we're just not paying much attention to it because they got other things on their minds. And so I think that's going to be really important. I think step two on the external stream is you obviously have to have a strategy for how that point of view is going to manifest itself. And all I want to say here is I want to encourage on this particular issue to think about it more than just a white paper and a marketing campaign. You know, think about how it's going to manifest itself from a marketing perspective, from a sales perspective, and from a delivery perspective. Because I think this is one of those things where if you start talking about this with your marketing unit and your partners and your people don't understand it and can't talk about it, and they're not doing any of the things you're talking about and their delivery teams, you're going to be exposed really fast and you're going to look like you got a lot of egg on your face. And so you can get away with that sometimes, right? You can launch a white paper and see what happens, but I don't think you can get away with that here. You've got to know your stuff all the way down the organization. So you better get that right. And then my step three is just, obviously it's just implement what you've done here. So you build a point of view, implement the strategy and just refine as you go. Recognize that whatever your point of view is, if you launch it in 60 days, it's probably going to change in 150. So be okay with that. Like, don't kick yourself for looking back and say, well, we got it wrong. So don't chase perfection in this one. Just, start to develop your point of view, put it in the marketplace, get feedback and iterate. Because I think that's the best thing you can do on this one is you can't chase perfection and spend a year in a research study trying to figure it out and then, launch this, glorious thing in a book in 2026 because you're going to be disappointed. So that would be my advice. So move quick and iterate, adopt that kind of like software mentality on this one. So, yeah.
Well, on your second point, you sound like you work for Prudent Pedal.
I do listen to you.
Well, yeah. Well, do you remember the webinar we did on, I don't remember what it was called.
Intellectual capital. But
yeah. It was built around intellectual capital and that issues to solutions matrix that I use with all of our clients and how marketing, sales, delivery all fit together.
Yeah.
We may need a link to that. I thought that was a good webinar that we did.
More importantly, what I want to point to you on is how you always talk about the clients that there's no delineation. So firms artificially created marketing, selling, and delivery, but clients is just one thing. Client experience. So I want to underline that point that you talk about because I think it's like super critical in this moment. All right. Wow, that was intense. So covered a lot of ground in this call. So anything you want to add before we wrap?
I'm talking to myself now, maybe not our listeners, in saying, this is an incredible time to be alive, that there's all this opportunity that exists with a lot of threats, but the best approach is just to throw yourself into it and be open to possibility, which is not the typical consultant mindset in my mind. I think most of us consultants, lean towards the pessimistic view, the risk management types of views. Not all, but a lot. I would just say, man, what a great time to be alive. Enjoy it.
Wiser words than there aren't. It's embrace the opportunity and don't be afraid. You know, I mean, I think the technology has scared a lot of people, and just don't be scared. Just jump in and with both feet and see where it takes you. Yeah, I agree. Great time to be alive. Great time to do a podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Yeah. Great series.
Yeah.
On to the next one, buddy.
All right. Talk to you in a couple weeks. See ya.
Thank you for listening to Rattle and Pedal, divergent thoughts on marketing and growing professional services firms. Find content related to this episode at rattleandpedal.com. Rattle and Pedal is also available on iTunes and Stitcher.